Honor, may it please the court, Douglas Lee Harville with the Harville Law Firm on behalf of appellant Travis Davis. Mr. Davis is here today and challenges three issues before this court. Today I'm only arguing the first, which has to do with whether the district court committed error by failing to require the government either to disclose the name of the eyewitness of the confidential informant to Mr. Davis or to conduct an in-camera inspection of the confidential informant to determine if that information needed to be revealed to Mr. Davis or if it did not. Your Honor, under Rivario and under Orozco, there's a three-prong test that the court should go through to determine whether or not the confidential informant needs to be disclosed to the defendant. In this matter, the court did not conduct that determination, that three-point analysis on the record. Therefore, Your Honors do not have a sufficient record to determine whether the court did or did not err. I would argue, though, with the evidence that was presented by this defendant, the defense that he put forward, he established facts that required the court, at the very least, to conduct an in-camera inspection. What happened here? In this case, the confidential informant stated that within 24 hours of the recovery of the cocaine and the other controlled substances, the confidential informant, he or she, had seen narcotic controlled substances in a black garbage bag in the defendant's house. The defendant presented testimony that in that 24 hours, he spent much of that time away from his house, which brings to play this question. How did the confidential informant see that and those drugs? They were in a hidden compartment inside the house, a hidden area inside the house, which would indicate that the confidential informant had been in the house. That begs a question. Did the confidential informant tell the government, I was with Mr. Davis in the house, I was conducting a drug deal with him, he pulled the black bag out of there? If so, then clearly under the first level of inquiry, the level of the informant's participation, there was a heightened involvement. This is not the case of a mere tipster, if those are the facts. A mere tipsters are protected. People who are more involved in the participation in the crime are not protected from disclosure. But we don't know that because the court refused to allow that type of questioning, and the government refused to give any hint of what the confidential informant had said. Sergeant Banta, who dealt with the confidential informant, refused to say what time the confidential informant saw the drugs in the house. He refused to say exactly what the confidential informant saw where. These are all factors that could have been simply told to the court by the government and then could have tested the defense that the defendant was offering, which goes to the second Rivario point. Is the disclosure helpful to the defense? If the government here had told the court and the court had inquired, our confidential informant says that he or she was in the house at 3 p.m. with the defendant, and the defendant's defense is at 3 p.m., and he has witnesses. Witnesses testified in this matter as to where the defendant was at certain times. If the court had made the government disclose to it the time that the drugs were allegedly seen in the house, then you know what do we need to do. Is this a case where you're going to directly pit what the confidential informant told the police against what the defendant offered his defense? If that is the case, that is a matter that has to go to a jury because it's a credibility issue. Do you believe the confidential informant who said, I was there at 3 with the defendant, or do you believe the defendant's witnesses who said at 3 we were elsewhere? Because if that's the case, then the confidential informant is lying. Why would he lie? Well, the government during the trial said, Your Honor, this is a reliable confidential informant. Come on. He knew that the substances were in a bag. How can that be made up? Simply this. The confidential informant could have planted the drugs there. We know nothing about that person. The court knows nothing about that person. Was it someone who was disgruntled? In this case, my client beat his wife, which is why he was not in the house at the time that the drugs were recovered. Was this a brother-in-law, sister-in-law, someone who wanted to get back at the defendant? Was this a competitor? My client, there is tons of evidence, which we are not denying for purposes of this argument, was dealing in drugs. That's not the issue before this court. He could be guilty. He could be the biggest drug dealer in Louisiana. The issue is, was his defense in this case for the possession of these drugs hindered by failing to disclose a confidential informant.
Is there any obligation, did your client have any obligation to raise the possibility or the probability or reasonable probability that somebody else had been in the house and put the drugs there before we even get into this?
I think clearly there is, because the law has said, and there were instances where a defendant put on testimony that he called several members of his family, and each of them said, we're not the confidential informant, therefore there is no confidential informant. And the court said, that's not enough. You need specifics. And this is a very specific defense. This is not simply a defendant who said, I wasn't at home in 24 hours. This person had no right to be in my house. Clearly they committed a crime and broke into my house or did something untoward. This is a defendant who put on witnesses, who had people come into court, swear under oath in front of a jury, I was with the defendant between this time and this time. He was doing work on my house. He was doing this. He was doing that. That is a specificity that I think he had to meet. And I think if Your Honors allow...
But did he put on evidence that no one else, I mean, and I've excluded, you know, I know who was in my house, and they're not, there seems to be a piece missing here.
I'm not sure that I follow on that, on that point, Your Honor, because...
Let's pursue that a little further. I thought the relevant inquiry is whether the police officer was told the information, not the truthfulness of what he was told. The guy could have been lying like a sailor, but as long as the police officer uses it and then gets a warrant relying upon it, and then if there's some basis for the liability, and then to get the warrant magistrate says it, then your attack is upon the warrant. And normally you don't get the CI's identity in that context.
Well, and
so you don't get to attack the. It matters. The guy can be a liar and a cheat and everything else, but if he's a CI and the guy relies upon that statement, the officer says, I've relied on my statement. The officer is the focus of credibility. Did you rely on that statement? Is that why you did that?
Well, and I think the difference, though, in this case and that general argument is if you have a CI who says, I have seen 15 people go into the defendant's house. They buy drugs. I bought drugs there before. And then you have the police make the assumption, we believe that there are narcotics in this house based on the past observations of the CI. That's a little different. And in this case, under Rivario, under the Supreme Court precedent, you don't have the right to the CI's identity in a suppression hearing. You're talking about the CI's identity is only relevant in a trial setting. Here,
you're not challenging the suppression. You're just saying you wanted to put this person on as a potential witness at trial to show that he's the only person that could have put the drugs there.
Exactly, Your Honor. And that, in this case, because of the defense that he did put on, that's the distinction. You're not going to be opening a broad door. You're not going to be jeopardizing the identity of confidential informants. You're not going to be announcing a broad rule.
How are you going to keep him? How are you going to retain his anonymity? You're going to put him on if you want to know who he is and put him on the stand.
Oh, well, you're not. This confidential informant clearly would be put at risk. But in this case, you have to weigh the fundamental right of the defendant. This is a defendant who not only made a broad statement, I wasn't there. He is someone who put on witnesses who had specific times that he was away from the house. That is what's key in this matter. If you have that Judge Walter take this confidential informant back into his chambers, or if you have him take Sergeant Banna back into his chambers and say, listen, we have the following timeline that the defendant has provided. He was not at his house from this time to this time, this time to this time. When did the CI see him? And the CI saw him at a time that my client has no defense for. You don't reveal the CI's identity because the defense is not involved here. But my client has set forth his defense. His witnesses have testified. Judge Walter knew when his defense was. He could have simply called that CI back there and said, when did you see him? And based on that, he would know this either supports the defense, it's a credibility issue that this jury needs to decide, do they believe the CI? Because if they believe the CI, he's guilty. If they don't believe the CI, then the reasonable inference is they find that the CI planted those drugs. That is why, in this case, he has made a very specific showing that could be countered and balanced in a very easy way. taking that confidential informant, protecting his or her identity in camera, and talk to them. That is something minimally that should have been done in this case to protect the defendant's rights as well as the government. This is someone, you have a level of involvement by the CI that's unknown, but at least it appears he was somewhat involved in criminal activity. It doesn't appear that he was a mere tipster, a neighbor who was suspicious, something of that nature, or a friend who was over, not engaged in criminal activity, who saw drugs or saw a bag. This is someone who's involved in the crime. We need to develop that more. This is someone who we can develop exactly how he or she, how critically important they were in that defense. Do the times fit? That's all it really boils down to, is do those times fit? If so, the identity does need to be revealed. And finally, if there is that much danger, but the defendant's rights to have this witness's identity revealed have to be met, the government has the choice, although it's not a good choice, but that is to dismiss the case. That's what this court has ruled. It's ruled in cases like this where the CI's testimony could be critical to a valid defense and a well-articulated defense. You have that choice, and you have to make it. We're not quite there yet, though. This can be solved in a simple manner. Remand this matter to Judge Walter. Let him hold an in-camera inspection. Let him see.
Let me back up. Let's suppose that the drugs, I mean, it wasn't just the presence of drugs that was used, as I understand it, to convict your client. It was the surveillance cameras that on several sides, at least two sides of the house, that went all the way, you know. There was lots of circumstantial evidence right. That this was a drug house.
That's...
And so where does that get us, even if...
That gets us to what is a very uncomfortable, I think, position within the justice system, but it's what the justice system is. This man, for purposes of this argument, you can find that he was a drug dealer. There's 404B evidence that he had a prior conviction for having cocaine. His house is set up clearly to provide defense against being a drug seller. But he had
drug paraphernalia, the little 2-inch by 2-inch bags.
He had the baggies, the guns to protect. I believe there were dogs outside. But that's not what is the critical issue that this system is concerned about. It's, was he guilty of this particular crime? Did he have a chance to defend himself against the allegations in this particular crime? And without the CI, he didn't. And if you have that, are you going to have a trial where the confidential informant testifies, defense puts on witnesses, they testify, and the jury then sees all that 404B evidence and rightly or wrongly decides, come on now, who are we going to believe? Are we going to believe the confidential informant who we find has no reason to lie? Are we going to believe the family? And in making this determination, we have all that other evidence.
So are you comfortable with the judge in an in-camera hearing making the fact-finding of credibility?
I am, Your Honor. Well, not the fact-finding of credibility, no. I'm not comfortable with him making that determination. What I'm comfortable with him doing is saying, when did you see this person? When did you see the drugs? 3 p.m.? Okay. Then going to defense counsel and say, counsel, I've talked to the confidential informant. His testimony does not conflict with your alibi. Therefore,
I had the right to cross-examination. That maybe he's lying about when he was there. Maybe I can prove he wasn't there when he said he was there. I mean,
right.
It seems to me the in-camera hearing is sort of a red herring.
No, it's not. It's unfortunately, as a defense attorney, would I like to have that person on the stand? Do I personally think you should always have that ability? Yes, I do. What's the case law? The case law is you don't have that right. We're going to protect the confidential informant. We're going to keep people from testifying. And the case law is that the judge gets to make that portion of the credibility determination. If I call in that CI and he tells me 3 p.m., and 3 p.m. doesn't fit in your defense, you don't get a chance at him. That's what the law is. So I have to concede that issue for your honors. But that's at least a question and an answer that Judge Walter should ask and get. And you trust Judge Walter's determination and his experience on the bench, but that question needs to be asked to ensure the fundamental fairness for this defendant in this matter. With that, my time is running out, but if your honors have any more questions, I'd be happy to address them. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is a constructive possession case. The government did not attempt to prove that defendant actually physically was in possession of these drugs at any particular time of the day within any 24-hour or 48-hour period. The residence in which defendant resided with his wife and a small child was where the drugs were possessed constructively by defendant. In a constructive possession case, it makes no difference whether at a particular time defendant was seen with the drugs. It is simply that the drugs are under his control and possession. And in this case, it was in the residence. The drugs were seized from the game room slash living room. And that is the same room where Felicia Hendricks, the cousin of defendant who testified about her dealings with defendant. She was a transporter of drugs for defendant. She cooked drugs with him, and she knew where he dealt them from. He dealt them from the same room in which the drugs were seized from. So this is a constructive possession, and defendant's allegations now that we need a timeline so that we can determine when the confidential informant saw defendant with the drugs or saw defendant possessing the drugs is irrelevant to the issue at all. The judge had information from the government that this person, the CI, if a participant was an absolute minimal participant, number two, that the met all of the criteria, that defendant did not specifically assert any particular defense that would make this information relevant. The CI's information was corroborated by the officers who prepared the search warrant. They said this particular CI had never been found to be in error in the 6 months the CI had been working for them. And the final issue is the danger to the CI. This defendant is a violent individual. One witness who testified, that was Felicia Hendricks, who testified to transporting the drugs for defendant and who testified to cooking the drugs with defendant, stated that she was afraid. She wanted a plane ticket to get out, but she was in jail. She did want to get away from defendant. She feared for her safety. So all of those things together militate against even having a hearing on this. The judge had enough information that this should not be disclosed. Further, the evidence...
Why was the hearing impractical?
I'm sorry?
Why was a hearing impracticable?
The judge just did not request one. And it would not have served any additional... It would have served a purpose. The hearing could have been held. But the judge had enough information that he did not need to have the hearing. Plus, the evidence was so strong against defendant. The issue was first raised in connection with the motion to suppress. And it was very well fleshed out at that time that the confidential informant was not the only person who had informed on defendant. This was an ongoing drug investigation against defendant, which had gone on for 5 years. This particular confidential informant had been informing for approximately 6 months, but it had gone on much longer than that. So there was a lot of background information that the district judge had, and that the judge who issued the search warrant, I should say, had to support the search warrant. The search warrant itself was exactly as the confidential informant had said. It would be in that particular location, a bag. The bag was described, what would be in the bag. There was no mention of a firearm. Perhaps the CI did not know that there was a firearm there. But the drugs were described accurately, and that's what was there. Defendant's defense as to a timeline has only really come up after the fact, after the trial. The He alleged before trial only that it might help his defense, it would be particularly helpful to his defense, but made no specific reference to a particular defense that this information would help him with. Now, defendant raises the timeline issue, which is irrelevant to a constructive possession offense. Also, in his motion for new trial, the defendant only alleged that the person was a paid informant as opposed to an unpaid informant. There was never any testimony that the informant was a paid informant. In fact, it was specifically stated at the motion to suppress and at the trial that this informant was not a paid informant. Any additional questions?
Was there, just with regard to the temporality of the timing of this, was there evidence from any other source that he was in his home at the same time the drugs were there?
I believe he was arrested on the domestic violence charges at his house, and there is some mention of that. I'm not sure where it is.
And then when did they find the drugs?
The drugs were found within an hour after his arrest on the domestic violence charges.
And did his cousin say those drugs were there, she knew they were there, this particular...
I'm sorry.
Did his cousin testify that she knew that particular black trash bag with the 10 bags of cocaine?
No, her testimony was very general. She knew that was the way the defendant operated. She was in jail at the time that the defendant was arrested on domestic violence charges. She was in jail on other charges. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Your Honors, again, the critical issue in this case is how did those drugs get there? It is a constructive possession case, but this is a defendant who put on a defense that he was not there when the confidential informant allegedly saw the drugs there. The confidential informant did give a very good description of exactly where the drugs would be found, how they would be packaged, what they would be in. That leads to a valid defense. That is a valid defense. The CI put them there. The critically important, opposing counsel says that the court had enough information to make its ruling on this issue to not reveal the source. But then she says, they told the judge if the confidential informant was involved in this crime, it was very minimal. They didn't tell the judge exactly what the role was.
Was there any other evidence that these drugs were present in the house at the same time as the defendant, and the defendant knew or should have known about that?
I would argue that there is not because of this. What happened is the defendant's in his house, there's a domestic violence call, the police come and arrest my client and his wife, remove them from the house while that's being investigated, the search warrant is executed. The issue, though, is these drugs are found in a secreted area. So the argument could be that he didn't know about these particular drugs. Again, we're not claiming that he's innocent of being a drug dealer, claiming that he was not allowed to put on a defense for these drugs. There's nothing in the record that would indicate that the confidential informant couldn't have put the drugs there in this secret location, called the police, less than 24 hours later, the police show up and then find them there. That is definitely an issue that could be presented to a jury if Judge Walter determines that there is a conflict between that defense and the times that the defendant placed on the record and what the confidential informant says. Again, the government says that the court had enough information, but they didn't tell him what the involvement of this person was. They didn't tell him the time that this person was there. Without that knowledge, how can the court possibly have made this ruling? How could it possibly have weighed these factors? That's all we're asking for. This is an incident where a gentleman is spending a significant amount of time in jail that can be resolved and should have been resolved in a very simple matter. Conducting that hearing, which nothing prevented, conduct that hearing which would not have endangered the CI. And then, Your Honors, don't have this issue before you. You either have a Judge Walter coming out and saying, I conducted the in-camera inspection of the CI, I've weighed these three factors, you don't pass the test. I don't think we can beat that, and we wouldn't be back here on an appeal. Or Judge Walker comes back and says, there's a conflict. This defendant has presented a defense which contradicts the
So you're saying we have jurisdiction to remand without reversing the judgment for a hearing and then see the results of that?
That's a good question. I think that Your Honors could fashion that for this reason. If it's remanded for a development of the record, in essence, then, and Judge Walter finds that there was harm, that there is a conflict, because this is a unique case. We have that record developed. We have the defense that the defendant put forward developed. Judge Walter can look at that and see what questions to ask the CI. And if he asks the CI those questions and supplements the record with a ruling, I have talked to the CI. I find that the CI would not have aided the defense. The record is supplemented. Perhaps it comes back here on a determination of that issue. Did Judge Walter hold the hearing correctly? Did he do things correctly? Now that that record is supplemented and we have that ruling that he conducted the necessary analysis.
Let me ask you a question, try to understand your theory. The confidential informant tells the DA that Brown Chevrolet is coming parked down on Main Street, will be parked there, and there are 2 kilos of cocaine in the trunk. He's given information before. The police officers go to set up surveillance. A man comes, gets in the car, and drives off. They stop him, and there the kid sees the cocaine. Motion to disclose identity of CI. Basis for the motion? Well, we don't know, but what the CI planted the drugs in the car. Granted or not, on that sole set of facts.
I think that set of facts to me would be a hard question. I'm afraid that under the case law, the motion to reveal would be denied because the drugs were there, the defendant got into the car.
Because you don't have any independent evidence that points to the any likelihood or distinct, anything more than speculation that the CI, because he knew there were drugs, did not do the plan himself.
That's true, but the difference in this case is in this case.
I understand your factual differences, but I just want to be clear about that.
Right, and I think that case, unfortunately, as a defense attorney, I would feel uncomfortable with it. But I think under the case law, because there's not a specific defense that would be countered, you're not saying that car was in my possession or I had that car cleaned, which would parallel the facts of this case. I took that car to get it car washed 2 hours before then. The people at the car wash looked through it. There were no drugs in that car. The CI then evidently had to plant them because he's the only person who had access to the car after it was washed at the car wash.
Well, you're applying a factual basis for which there is a substantial question as to whether or not this was a plant. My concern is that in every CI case, not every, but in most CI cases, the very fact of knowledge itself cannot be a basis for disclosure because of the speculation that because he knew that he did it, that it was a plant. Otherwise, I don't think that the Guaviera supports that. Now, that's the difficulty I have with it.
And I agree with Your Honor's difficulty, but I think that what's different, again, in this case is you have what can be, you have the in-camera inspection, and you can get a clear answer from the judge because there's not that vacuousness. There's not the, well, at some point in time it may or could have not been. We have specific times that my client was somewhere else. If the CI says, I was in that location with the defendant at that time and I saw the drugs, then Judge Walter's going to know something smells here, something's fishy. It's not going to be a speculation or, I'd love to tie up everything. It's a set fact pattern.
I understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Harville, you were court appointed.
I was, Your Honor.
We thank you for your service, and you've done a good job for your client, commendable job for your client.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it.
The court will recess till 9 o'clock.